The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Every time we've unveiled a new attraction, attendance has spiked.
That was awesome.
Corporate felt genetic modification would up the wow factor.
She was designed to be bigger than the T-Rex.
What happened to the sibling?
She ate it.
There you see, up close with four dinosaurs.
There's five dinosaurs.
Look, one, two, three, four.
Five.
You got 20,000 people. You got no more boats. You don't have enough guns.
If we do this, we do this my way.
We got eyes on target. Light it up!
Well, it looks like an exciting adventure. It's the fourth of the Jurassic Park, now Jurassic World, movies, and I guess it's one of those, if I'm not mistaken, one of those reboots that is now not a sequel as much as it is a reboot of the previous two movies. It kind of forgets that the previous two movies existed, goes back to the first one and says, let's see what it would be like if we continued that story instead of the way the other movies did it. We're going to be reviewing the movie Jurassic World with Pastor Ted Giese on this Thursday afternoon, June the 18th. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Pastor Ted Giese will join us for that movie review for the first half hour of the program. We're going to spend the next half hour with Dr. James Hitchcock. We're going to spend some time talking to him about a question that's floating around in the media. It's been asserted by Rush Limbaugh, by a couple of other people questioned. Is Pope Francis a Marxist? Is he a communist? He recently made some statements and has made some official statements that have led people to ask that question. We'll ask it, we'll examine the question and its answer with Dr. James Hitchcock, Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University, in a few minutes here on Issues Etc. Then we'll have the Issues Etc. comment line opened up. We'll play some of your comments and we'll respond to them in the second hour of the program. And Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us to round everything off on this Thursday with Christ in the Old Testament, our regular series with him, Job 38, The Lord Answers Job, Out of the Storm and the Whirlwind. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours with questions or comments. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners are free to use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. 618-223-8382. We're going to review the movie Jurassic World. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
This isn't exactly the fourth in a sequence, but is there a common theme or idea that kind of runs all of the Jurassic Park slash World movies?
Well, I don't know if there's like a common theme, but there's definitely a common plot. Like the common plot is, and maybe that is where the theme kind of comes from, but the common plot, and there was like, in the second one, there was the Dr. Ian Malcolm, who's the guy in the first movie, was all about the chaos theory stuff. He said, sure, it all starts with oohs and ahs, and then there's the running and screaming for your life. That kind of is the theme. It's like maybe the theme is things run amok, and men, mankind, humanity, causing things to run amok. Hubris, I guess, would be the theme that runs through all of the films.
So there is a message here, although it's couched in an awful lot of CGI and, like you said, screaming and running. There is a message here that man dare not overstep his bounds.
There is, and that's generally been the theme throughout all of these, and it does fit into this as well. But there does seem to be something a little different in this case, is that the movie seems to be more about how you deal with controlling your situation. I guess the hubris is that they think they can control it, and then it gets out of control. And again, that same thing happens in this movie. In a nutshell, again, it's the same kind of plot. You know, like they've overstepped their bounds scientifically, made something that they can't have a grasp on. In this case, it's a new hybrid dinosaur called Indominus Rex, and it gets free and then tries to eat them. But in this case, they also are dealing with this idea of what to do about the fact that you're not in control, or struggling with that idea.
What exactly is the relationship between this movie and the three that came before it? I take it that it's not a reboot of the original, but it is a reboot of the sequel, isn't it?
Well, not exactly. What it is it kind of sidesteps the other two movies, and it's almost more like a direct sequel to the first film. And I guess, you know, it's been a while since I saw the two middle movies in this franchise, but I did rewatch the first one in advance of watching this one. And the two middle ones, I think they happen on another island nearby. It's also a research facility. So it doesn't really specifically involve the island that the first film was on, I think. Someone might want to fact check that for me, but it seems like what's really going on in this movie is it's the direct link to the first film, and all of the homages, most all of them, are all kind of pointing back to that first film. So there's a very strong thread of nostalgia, but most of the nostalgia is directed straight back to that first film. So in that way, it kind of sidesteps the two middle movies and doesn't really deal with that stuff in the same way. In fact, the only returning character from the first film to this one is the character of Dr. Henry Wu, who is a scientist working on the island doing this genetic work with dinosaurs, and played by B.D. Wong. You also get Richard Attenborough, but he's deceased, so you just get like a statue of him. So they acknowledge that his character, who was the character who was setting the whole park up in the first film, that he's part of the story, and they're pointing back to that Mr. John Hammond, who had originally set up the island.
So how do we do this? What's the basic premise of these movies, and then upon which Jurassic World begins?
The basic premise is that this is like science fiction with the emphasis on fiction. So you get like a little piece of amber. From that, there's a you know, prehistoric mosquito. In that mosquito is blood that they can take and get DNA somehow out of it. And then from that, they can put in some missing parts with like frogs or whatever and make dinosaurs. And so they're setting up kind of like a nature preserve with dinosaurs on it. In this case, it's more like SeaWorld meets Disneyland meets African wild safari with dinosaurs, sort of a deal. And the previous, that first film, they were just setting the park up, and it didn't work out. At this point, the park has been open for 10 years in this new movie, Jurassic World. The park's been open for 10 years, but the people coming are kind of jaded. They're kind of strapped for cash all the time, so they're being compromised, and this is why they are trying to get the big new attraction and also trying to get sponsorship In this case, it's the Verizon Wireless or whatever is going to sponsor this Indominus Rex. So this is the kind of setup for the movie. In the movie itself, it's really not even all about all of that stuff. Really, what the movie is about mostly is a single character, Claire Deering, who's an administrator at the park, and then a couple other characters surrounding her. But it's really kind of a moving away from being completely buttoned down and in control about everything to accepting the fact that you're not in control of anything. So there's a character, I want to make everybody doctors because they're all scientists, but they're not. This Mr. Masrani, who is the kind of oil tycoon who owns the island now, and he makes a comment while they're flying in this helicopter, and he says that the key to a happy life is to accept you are never actually in control. And that's the thesis for the whole film. It's like the thesis statement. It's the main theme. It drives all the action, all the plot, everything. All the character arcs are driven by that idea. And it opens up maybe questions for an audience member who looks past the dinosaurs and the action and wants to think about that question.
Now, what was so... I don't want to keep going back to the first one, but the first one is the touch point here. What was so... kind of iconic about the first film that people have latched on to, that it kind of stood out as a different kind of science fiction film? What do you think it was?
Well, there's always been this giant fascination with dinosaurs ever since the mid-19th century. So people grow up with this fascination with dinosaurs. Little kids do too, right? So primarily kids, as they're introduced to this, it's very exciting. And what you had with that first movie is the first movie, Jurassic Park, from 1993, was by Steven Spielberg. So Steven Spielberg, same guy that brings you things like Saving Private Ryan, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Jaws. So think Jaws, right? So now you got the guy who made Jaws, who's now doesn't have a great white shark to use. Now he's got Tyrannosaurus Rex. He's got the T-Rex. And he is able to do things in that first movie with that were extraordinarily suspenseful and had the audiences on the edge of their seat. And that's what kind of sucked everybody in. You had, like, the director of Jaws working with a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and there was a lot of just amazing moments with that in terms of suspense and action, and that really dragged everybody right into the story. And, of course, the story itself was written by this Michael Crichton in 1991, and he's pretty famous for all sorts of things, including other science fiction stuff like Andromeda Strain and things of that nature.
I guess the thing we haven't discussed here yet with respect to this film and the series of films that it sits in is that it is firmly grounded. While it has a very moralistic message in that sense of, you know, man dare not overstep his boundaries, drawn for him by what? Blind evolution. Hubris really has no meaning if we're just the random products of blind evolution. But the film is built on that worldview, isn't it?
It is, and it isn't. I guess, like, when it comes to all of that stuff, like actual hard science, real philosophy, actual religious theology, it's all kind of just painted on the surface of these movies. It's no more deeply philosophical than The Matrix is, or something like that. So it kind of toys with those things where it's convenient for driving the plot. I think you're going to probably get more of the actual digging into that in the book by Michael Crichton than you're going to get in any of these movies, because the key thing for Steven Spielberg was suspense and action and story. Not so much like, hard-hitting science fiction, per se. But, yeah, I mean, like, they do, at different times, they do talk about millions of years of evolution, but then they also throw in, you know, Mother Nature as a creator. And if you're looking very carefully, like sitting on the console of one of the characters in the kind of control room. There's a little book written by that Dr. Ian Malcolm, you know, about God creating dinosaurs, not man. So, like, there is little bits and smatterings of stuff in there, but it's all just kind of on the surface in the same way that the CGI special effects are on the surface. The guts of it is kind of like this story about being in control or not being in control. So, and that, if you think further into that, then the question is, if I'm not in control, who or what is? Or might there be nothing in control of anything? And I guess that maybe gets back to what you were saying about what's hubris if everything is happening totally by chance and there's nothing guiding any of it, let alone, you know, God.
Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. We're viewing the movie Jurassic World on this Thursday afternoon, June the 18th. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And we'll be right back. Is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who guess what picture you see?
Why do you think the way you do? And what about your friends, your neighbors, your church? Is it because of what the scriptures say, or is it because they only think what the world has told them to think?
Pastor Jonathan Fisk talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Making the Case for the Church's response to postmodernism will be a crash course in the who's who of the postmodern pagan mindset, with a hard-hitting look at both the assumptions of the American pop culture world and the rarely mentioned but catastrophic effects that may not yet affect you, but will certainly affect your children.
You can meet and hear Pastor Jonathan Fisk making the case for the Church's response to postmodernism June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 400. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Tyler Arnold at Christ Lutheran in Platte Woods, Kansas City, Missouri. We are privileged to serve our Lord in word and sacrament through the historic liturgies of the church. Do join us for divine service at 8 and 10:45 and adult Bible study and Sunday school at 9:30. Each Wednesday evening we have Vespers at 7 p.m. Our address is 6700 Northwest 72nd Street, or call us at 816-741-0483. You can find us on the web at ChristLC.net. Come and be our guest at and with Christ.
Salvation by grace through faith, the Christological meaning of marriage, the resplendent armor of God. These are some of the themes that you'll find in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, the new Concordia Commentary on Ephesians. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can read an excerpt of the Concordia Commentary on Ephesians at issuesetc.org, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, the Concordia Commentary on Ephesians. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Jurassic World with Pastor Ted Giese on this Thursday afternoon, June the 18th. In a few minutes, we'll turn to the subject of whether or not Pope Francis is a communist. This has actually been asserted by Rush Limbaugh, among others, and questioned by some serious media in the BBC. Is he a Marxist or a communist, based upon some recent public comments? Dr. James Hitchcock, Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University, will be our guest to answer that question and to examine the question itself. Ted, I want to pick up on something that you said before the break, having to do with the moral world here. It is a moral world, even though you say the veneer is rather thin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the morality of Jurassic World? Not the park, but obviously the film and its story.
I mean, I guess on a surface kind of thing again, I mean, it's you're people who are, you would identify with being good, you know, they make it through the movie. Sorry to spoil it for people who haven't seen it yet, although I think practically everybody has, made a huge amount of money last weekend. But and the people who have kind of more nefarious plans are the ones who get their comeuppance. And that's pretty typical kind of blockbuster kind of stuff. You don't have the maniacal villain who gets away with it in this. Now, the instrument that gets them is, of course, dinosaurs. And that's interesting, too, because what guides that process? I mean, if you're really thinking about all of this as you're watching the movie or afterwards as you're contemplating it, because in watching the movie itself, it's exciting and it's pretty fun. It's not as good as the first film, but it's quite entertaining, and it's a real nostalgic kick. So you may not have time while you're watching it to think about any of this, but afterwards you might have some time to contemplate and think about what you just watched. In which case, yeah, I mean, why would there be any morals at all? Why wouldn't it all be completely random? I guess the only one distressing moment, there is a kind of a distressing random moment where a character who, you know, doesn't really deserve death is killed by what we as kids used to call pterodactyls. There's other names for it, but like flying dinosaur. And there's a portion of the movie where there are these pterodactyls, flying dinosaurs, like just eating park goers like birdseed. And that is kind of a distressing little element to it. But when it comes to like the central main characters, that kind of good and evil and comeuppance and, you know, squeaking through is very up front and center in this particular movie in terms of morals as well.
In all of these films, I mean, from Moby Dick to all, you know, the great classics of literature, the whale isn't always just a big sea mammal. And the dinosaur here in Jurassic Park, if you can make that comparison with, say, Moby Dick, what's the dinosaur? What does the dinosaur represent here?
Well, the dinosaur, unlike the other ones, where there's good dinosaurs and bad dinosaurs. There's the herbivore ones. There's even amongst the predatory dinosaurs, the carnivorous ones. There's good ones and bad ones too. Indominus Rex is really the like literal embodiment of what happens when you're super greedy. And you also were trying to please everyone, and then this is like the spawn of that, and it's also a hybrid. So all of the dinosaurs in this film, or in all these films, are kind of to a certain extent a hybrid. But what they've done with this one is that they've actually, it's got some Velociraptor in it, and it's got some T-Rex in it, and so it's a hybrid of various different kinds of dinosaurs together. And that is also just because they want to make the biggest attraction. And even in our own lives, when we occasionally we'll hear about things like tragedies that will happen at some place like SeaWorld, where somebody working in the park, working with like a killer whale, will get killed. You know, we shudder at that. But then in this movie, it's the same kind of possible tragedy that they're playing with as well. And there are moral questions that people ask about whether you should have these kinds of parks at all. And interestingly, that's been kind of silent in the media. There hasn't been a lot of talk about boycotting this film because of SeaWorld or something of that nature. I guess people maybe aren't putting those pieces together.
Is there a theme here that may be unintentional? But can the story be told without a fallen nature, without a fallen creation?
It's pretty hard to do. I think that, like most all movie, every movie really is driven. Like there needs to be drama. There's going to be some sort of tension. So that's where it's using the fallen nature of mankind and the fallen nature of the world that we live in to drive that. That's where conflict comes from. So it would be very hard to make a movie with no conflict in it all or where human nature or the fallenness of the world isn't part of it. Even if you went to like a different kind of sci-fi kind of thing, you went to C.S. Lewis's Perelandria, where part of it takes place on a planet that hasn't experienced the fall, quote-unquote. Even there, C.S. Lewis ends up having to put in some kind of fall in order to make the story go. It's an interesting element of it. I mean, and it's definitely not devoid of that. So it's hard to make a movie like this. You kind of end up having to, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You need to have some sort of conflict to drive things along.
So, I mean, in a more lighthearted note here with regard to the film, does Chris Pratt have the best agent in Hollywood? He hasn't made a bad movie yet since he left the small screen.
I know. He's the guy right now, and he's having a great time, and he seems genuinely grounded and nice about things, right? So this has been good. He's a lot of fun in this movie, and he does a perfectly good job. And he is a good actor, because you'll be watching it and you kind of forget about Star-Lord and whatever else. And he's this guy, Owen, who's working with the Velociraptors, and that's, he does a good job. He's a very good actor.
What about the other acting in the film? I mean, one of the ones that you always expect great things of is Bryce Dallas Howard. I mean, she's made some stunning stuff.
Yeah, she's really good in this. And she starts off as kind of like this button-down kind of character who's very corporate, administrator type. And then along the way, she kind of rediscovers or, touches base with or, embraces, more family-oriented things and like looking after her nephews and caring about them and maybe giving, a romantic relationship another shot, that kind of stuff. And some people aren't going to be satisfied with all of that, but in a way, it's kind of like, she's kind of a little bit like Ebenezer Scrooge, and starts off kind of cold, ends up warm at the end. Like, that's kind of her trajectory. And again, that gets back to that, like that line, the key to a happy life is to accept you are never actually in control. And she's a character who is most of all in control of everything and doesn't like anything being out of control.
So let's round this off with some pastoral concerns or recommendations with regard to the audience here, because while it's, we're not talking here about deep stuff, we are talking about a pretty intensely exciting and violent movie.
If this is like some small kid's first introduction to going to the movies, maybe, I don't know, show them something like How to Train Your Dragon, at home on television. Like, this is going to be really intense for very small kids. It's PG-13, and you may have opportunity to cover the kid's eyes a couple times along the way if you're taking a kid to see this movie. Otherwise, it's going to be okay for a lot of people. I think one pastoral concern would be is to not let the opportunity completely pass you by to think about the First Commandment and also the first article of the Apostles' Creed, because that question of being in control, it's like, well, if you're not in control, who's in control? Who could you trust with being in control? And as a Christian, you want to, fear and love and trust in God above all things. So as a Christian viewer, maybe think back to that. And if you happen to have a reader's edition of the Book of Concord, or it's available to you online, go look up the Large Catechism and look up the section on the Apostles' Creed. And have a read of that first article, because don't lose this opportunity to do it. Because in there it talks about God as creator and also the providential hand of God directing and protecting and giving what we need for our daily life. So if we're not going to be in control of everything ourselves, then we have to ask who is in control. And as a Christian, we have an answer. So don't let that slip you by. Have an opportunity. Go take a look at that stuff. And think about it in relation to the movie if you can.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he's taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can read his review of Jurassic World at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thank you again.
Thank you.
When we come back from this break, Let's see. Stephen Bohr, who is from the Heritage Foundation and himself a Catholic, has recently said that he thinks Pope Francis clearly has some Marxist leanings. The BBC also is asking and answering the question, is the Pope a communist? And Rush Limbaugh said that his latest exhortation, The Joy of the Gospels, is pure Marxism. We'll deal with that criticism of Pope Francis with Dr. Hitchcock right after this.
T-shirts, shorts, sun. Get in shape this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Get A-Fit this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
You're one day away from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin; Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin; Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois; Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland; Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming; Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington; Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois; Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas; St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri; Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska; Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri; Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas; Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois; Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin; Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois; Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois; and Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.